Would you introduce yourself, please?
Hey, I'm Johnny of the drums.
And we discovered, come on, let's go into the deep dark moment that we met 12 years ago. Holy moly.
That's wild. I mean, that's the shocking moment of the day for me.
Me too. What do we do now? So we know that, I already talked about Goat Explosion in the past, and we know about Elkland, and we know about 2008, and we know about Florida and Brooklyn, and tension, and almost breakup, and then we'll segue into all that other stuff. But what I'm curious about, let's get to today, like right to now. What blows you away that no one has asked you yet?
Surprised that, you know, I've spoken a lot about making this record on my own. No one who's interviewed me has really asked the specifics of what my process is, or, you know, and
so, I mean, they just go, oh, cool, man. That's great. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pro Tools. Yeah. Logic. Yeah. Great. Okay. Thanks.
I mean, not even that. They're just like, oh, you did it. You did it on your own. Okay. And then they move to the next section.
But so what's it like to be gay?
Right. Right. Yeah. People always want to get right to that, but yeah. which I'm happy to. I'm happy to talk but about.
So whatever. You become a songwriter. You become the lead singer, and next thing you know, you're in a band. And I think that there's an amazing amount of people that form bands because you don't want to be known as the singer-songwriter. Aside from the fact that it ferreted its way down, and then a partner says, see ya. Way before the partner said, see ya, this was your record.
You know, I definitely was ready to make my own record. And I actually started making my own record kind of without telling Jacob.
And that's where it got, where things got a little feisty.
Well, I think he just sensed, maybe. I know that he was miserable. He was miserable before that. And I was sort of sensing that he might leave the band. There was no big blow up. Jacob and I are still great friends, but he has other passions. One being puppetry, believe it or not. He's very interested in puppetry and very good at it. And he's actually becoming quite successful in what he's doing. So I was, you know, happy to see him do that. I knew how miserable he was. And I knew that I had a lot I wanted to say. So when he emailed me and said, hey, I think I need to leave. Here's why. I had about 30 seconds where I felt kind of weird, like, oh God, what am I going to do? And almost instantly it felt like a gift. It really did. And I had already written, you know, 4 or 5 tracks. And so I just like, I'm just going to keep going with this, you know, and these were songs that I was even kind of nervous to show Jacob, you know, because of the personal nature. Before this, I was always sort of representing more than just me. So in a sense, I had to generalize.
It's a responsibility.
Yeah. No. Well, I mean, yeah, but sometimes it's easier said than done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, as the lead songwriter, right? To represent the band. Yeah. And a point of view of a band when you're not even sure what that point of view is.
Well, it was always tricky for me. I think every case is different, you know. Some bands, like I'm sure the Smiths, they just let Morrissey talk about Morrissey. And they probably didn't want...
They were dark from moment one.
They weren't interested in being represented lyrically, I don't think. But, however, I don't think Jacob wanted me to sing about Jacob's life. But he definitely didn't want me to fully sing about my own. And so I was limited when it came to things like talking about sex, talking about drug use, talking about fetishes, things that are me, things that, like, you know, I've struggled with, things that I love, things that scare me to death, you know. So that, you know, Jacob always wanted to lean toward more of like an escapist sort of cinematic sort of vibe. You know, he liked to create almost like movie scenes out of songs. And for me, I was just really ready to, I want my record to be like, you know, informational and based in reality and based in the here and now. And Jacob really always wanted us to lean into this sort of like nostalgic, glorified past, you know. And if I got too personal about my past, like there's a song called Head of the Horse on the new record, you know, Jacob would kind of have a hard time with that. And look, this is not to slight Jacob. Jacob is an amazing artist, and he really, it's just, we both have tunnel vision, you know? And when it, I don't think we're both so, like, alpha dogs as people. I think I am. But I think as artists, we both sort of step into this alpha dog role, and sometimes that gets a bit tricky.
Well, here you are. You made this record theoretically in your bedroom, but theoretically, a record sounding that good doesn't just magically go from the bedroom to the mastering. So tell me a little bit, what level did you take it out of the bedroom, and then who stuck their nose in it to finish it up?
So I fully produced the record. I recorded it. 95% of the sounds you hear were just what I recorded on my own. What I did after this album was kind of recorded is I brought all my sounds, all of my songs, and all of the stems is what we call them, the industry term, to an engineer, Jonathan Schenke, who did Parquet Courts. I really fell in love with the Parquet Courts first album. And so I was walking in LA and I saw this billboard for their new record, and I thought, oh my God, because I was thinking at the time, who could sound engineer my record? I think that's what I want to do, because I've always self-produced, but I knew I wanted to kind of like up the ante with the sonics of the record. So I saw this billboard and I thought, oh my God, I got to reach out to whoever did that. So I ran home and Googled it, and lo and behold, he had the time, and he wasn't like crazy expensive, and he was in Brooklyn, and everything seemed like it was supposed to happen. So I brought all of my sounds to him. And he has, of course, these beautiful old analog processors from a million years ago. And so we would just feed the sounds through those old processors, and it's just sort of beefed them up and gave them more life. And there were a few parts we would re-record, but you know, there was nothing like written.
And while we're on anti, yes, one of the quotes you have is that they understood you. So it's a really interesting label, because you got your Tom Waits on there, and then you've got your you. Did you bring them the record before you signed?
Yeah. Well, in my original form, before we brought it to Johnny to beef it up, yes, they heard the record, and I walked in and they told me they thought I was a freak, and that's what they liked about me. And they said, you know,
you went to that very cool gothic weird building on Sunset.
It was actually a block and a half from my apartment.
So yeah, so right in Silver Lake.
Yeah, I walked in and they were just, you know, he said, you're an outsider, and we like signing outsiders. They said, you know, we've followed your career, and it always felt like you didn't belong to a certain group of people, and you didn't belong in any scene. You were kind of always just too weird for any scene. We like weird, and it makes so much sense. If you look at the roster of that label, it's kind of like a really colorful roster that's like kind of all over the place, you know? So I just thought, like, maybe this is like really the place for this record, you know? And so they've just been so lovely and understanding, and it's been amazing.
Being back home, in quotes.
Oh, God. I mean, it feels now, being in New York, like it sort of feels like I'm home, but there's like if I have to identify any place as home, it's New York.
Being on Christian radio when you were younger, being in a household that was exactly that, right? How radical does that make you in these times?
Oh, God. I mean, I had my first radio show when I was like 12 or 13 years old.
And well, let's just get over with it. And the sample is in the front of one of the tracks. So this way we've covered that.
That's right. I do have a sample of me talking on my radio show, yeah, on the new album. I don't know. I talked about it last night on stage, actually. And it's been this thing that keeps popping up about, I don't know why, like I used to, you know, it just kind of feels like I'm my father's son now, you know, in the sense that I'm standing on a stage with a microphone, just like my father is, as the pastor of a church, and I'm doing radio interviews like my father would do with his radio stations that he owned and ran. The big difference is our message is the complete opposite. You know, he thinks he's preaching love, and I view it as hate.
Through his filter.
through his, you know, what he, you know, he's concerned we're all going to burn in hell. So he's trying his best to.
I hope so.
to make sure. Well, I'll tell you what. When I was a kid, my mother would describe heaven. Oh, it's going to be, you know, we're going to be worshiping Jesus forever. I was thinking, God, this half hour worship service this morning, I was bored out of my mind. I can't imagine worshiping Jesus forever. Do you have like a better sell than that for heaven?
Yeah, I need some marketing.
Heaven needs some real marketing. I mean, if I had to choose between the two, I guess maybe I'd go to the flames. But no, you know, it feels really good to just, you know, I'm very similar to my father in a lot of ways. You know, he put out a record when he was like 22, and you know, he's still every Sunday morning standing on a stage talking to a bunch of people, and so there's a lot of similarities there. But it does feel radical to say the things that I'm saying. You know, every night I've been stopping in the concert and, you know, kind of pouring out my heart. I have a specific message for this tour, and it's aimed towards LGBTQ people who are race specifically in religious households that are anti who they are. So. It's weird. It's like I'm getting preachy, you know, and for the at the beginning of this career, I was quoted many times as saying like, I'm not political. I stay out of all that. I'm just a guy in a band. We're just making music, you know. So I feel like such a different person now. I've just really, now that it almost becomes the point of doing any of this at all. It's like, if I'm going to sit down and make another record, I'm going to like talk about some things, you know, and that's the only way for me to feel relevant, like that what I'm doing is relevant. And so if I feel like I'm not affecting anything other than like making people dance or something, that's not quite enough for me. I want to make people think, and I want people to think about themselves. I want people to look inside. So that's kind of where my aim is now.
Let's go down another dangerous road. The thing I said we wouldn't talk about, so we're not going to. But genres, indies, being asked again and again, you know, who do you listen to? And one of the quotes that I love that you say is, you know what I listen to? I listen to my own music. Now, obviously, you listen to other music. That's a given.
Well, now, you know, it feels like, you know, musicians these days almost have the pressure of like someone who's working on Wall Street or something. Like,
you're in the album cycle, Johnny. Yeah. You're in the album cycle.
There's this big push for everyone to, you know, like being a musician these days, it's like every artist I know that I talk to is like, oh yeah, I just had a meeting with like Kesha or something, or I just had a meeting with Charlie XCX. Or,
oh yeah, you got to do some co-writing, man.
Everyone's got to be co-writing, and everyone's got to have like Rihanna featured on their track, or someone, everyone has to have The Weeknd producing their record. Nobody could just sit down and makes a goddamn record anymore. It feels like there's this pressure to like, every music video has to have an A-list celebrity in it doing a cameo. Like, there's no, it's like we're losing all purity, and it's making me crazy.
Making a pop record about a breakup with some really dangerous lyrics in there. I call it the Tootsie Roll pop. It's really sweet and glossy and coated and crunchy on the outside, and it's dark and gooey on the inside. It's my favorite stuff.
Yeah, I think it's mine too, just, you know, in a very natural way. I've never sat down and said, well, today I'm going to write a song that sounds happy, but is actually really, really sad, you know. There have been times where I've tried to write something joyous, and then, you know, by default, what comes out when it's time to express with lyrics, it's something that is not joyous. And it's just, you know, if I tried to do anything differently, it would feel a bit forced, you know. So that's another rule I have for myself. I'm just going to, like, you know, I take a deep breath when I sit down to write a song, and I sink into myself. I literally, like, physically, I kind of, like, relax my whole body and just kind of, like, fall, let my bones fall on top of each other, and then I just kind of like take another deep breath and I just go, you know. There's no forethought, there's no big like paper trail where I'm scratching out lyrics and trying again. This stuff just kind of like oozes out because I wait until I'm in a natural place. I think this is why, you know, we have 3 years between almost every record, because I just can't force this stuff. And that's also why I've like, speaking of co-writing, I have my like, you know, Cobalt, my publisher, is just like up my ass about like, when are you going to get in a room with someone? When are you going to get in a room with someone? I'm like, you know what? I've tried it. I think I actually hate this. Because I've tried to like make them happy a couple times. And it's just like, it really has to be organic. And it really, I just like, I don't get joy from it, you know? I don't get joy. And I'm at the point in my life, I spent my entire childhood trying to please people. I spent my entire teenage years trying to please people. I spent my entire 20s trying to please people.
And now you're in rock and roll with an audience. Aren't you supposed to try to please them? What's wrong with you?
You know what I've learned? You know what I've learned? Here's something I haven't said in an interview. Here's what I've learned. I've been like running around like a maniac on stage, even in the Elkland days. I'm like marching on stage. I'm essentially like doing backflips all over the place. Half of that's me. The other half of that is based completely out of fear. Fear that if I'm not juggling, you know, watermelons and pirouetting all over the stage, that half the audience is going to leave or get bored. It's a fear-based thing. It's still bad patterns from the past, trying to get people's approval. Here's what I've learned, and this is so magical, and it's changed my life. For this tour, I decided to stop all that. I still dance around. I still move. But I decided to not push it past the point of, like, what is actually me and what's coming natural. And guess what? I'm getting a better reaction than I've gotten in the last 9 years of being in the drums.
They're paying more, even more attention to the music.
And I think they're recognizing, they see, oh, now this is what, I think they've been waiting for that. I think part of what's held me back in my career, in my life, is the dog and pony show, is me pushing too hard. I think people are sensitive to that.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs on the outside. And then you get to play whatever you want to play in between